There are a ton of games to talk about on episode 274 of the It's Obvious podcast. My name's Garrett Drake, and I'm joined online by Jacob Alka.
Garrett, it's been way too long since we've last spoken, especially on this show. And like you mentioned, there's a lot to talk about, but more importantly, I want to hear how you've been. I haven't laid my eyes upon you in quite a while, so tell me how you've been.
I've been well, Jacob. To those of you that want to skip right to the video game goodness, you can refer to the description on any podcast service you're listening to, including YouTube, and time codes are there, so you can jump around if you'd like, because we're talking about a lot of games today, and really no particular order, just having fun with it, because it's been a while, so feel free to do that. But in the meantime, Jacob, like I said, I have been well. Good to see you again. I'm thrilled to know that in the near future, you're moving right down the street from me, practically.
Yeah, so I teased that before we actually recorded, but yeah, I'm moving down to the big city, the big ATL. It's going to be great.
At long last.
Yeah. It's been.
It's a shame it isn't with me, but at the end of the day, at least you're very close to me. So there's high potential for us to start cranking out some good old fashioned YouTube content again.
Sure. Yeah. We have no excuse not to anymore.
Yeah. We've been separated by the great chasm of unforgiving suburbs of Atlanta.
It's really the traffic.
A few years now. Yeah. So it's something to look forward to for sure. But nothing to report, Jacob. I've literally just been working all these months.
Likewise for me.
I wish I had something more exciting to tell you, but that's it for me.
I mean, I'm going on vacation here in a couple weeks, going down to Florida for a little September beach trip here at the end of September. Really looking forward to it because I haven't really taken a vacation in a couple of years. So,
Jacob, you mind if I get something off my chest while we're talking about Florida?
Yeah, well, what's going on?
Okay, so there's a sect of human beings. Maybe it's just in the South, I'm not sure, but there are people that say, like you and I, Florida, and then there are those that say Florida. They replace the O in Florida with an A, mm-hmm. And those same people are usually the ones that say orange instead of orange. They'll say Nels instead of nails.
Ugh.
And the list just goes on and on and on and on and on, and that's always kind of like rubbed me the wrong way for some reason, because you could really argue, okay, well, if you're going to say Florida, we may as well say Georgia. And
Georgia.
New York, California, if you're going to say Florida. Where's the A in Florida? Please explain this to me.
I don't think I can.
Same thing with orange. It's
These people
orange.
Are freaks. These people are complete freaks. They don't know how to speak the language correctly. There's nothing else to
bother
it.
Me. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like intentionally mispronounce some things in my life, but that's a big one that has always kind of bothered me. So
it sounds like a Midwestern thing.
Yeah, you'd think it'd be like a Minnesota thing, but I know people in the Deep South that say Florida.
Next time you see one, do me a favor and
someone say, "I'm gonna go paint my nails." They're gonna say, "I'm gonna paint my nails."
There's no way people say that. There's no way. I don't believe
the same people that say naked instead of naked.
That's Preston.
So. Yeah, Preston's one of them. He doesn't say Florida though.
I always have been bothered by the way Preston says naked. Or naked.
Yeah, he's pretty committed to that.
Yeah. He's the only person I've ever met that says naked.
At least he's consistent.
Yeah. That's how he genuinely says it. Like, he's not saying it to be funny or anything. Like, so I don't know if there's like a lot of people that say it like that, or if it's just one of those things. Like, so I watched this streamer that what's the word that he says? Oh, so he pronounces, so it's a guy named Asmongold. He's like a big WoW streamer, but he plays a lot of MMOs. But he'll say things like cockroach. Like, I'll put an A in cockroach.
Cockroach.
I think he just does it to be comedic. What else? He says like one other thing, dude.
I know there's I think we've had the caramel and caramel debate before.
Yeah. Well, that's different because those are both like widely. Both of them are right.
That's like tomato, tomato.
Yeah. No, tomato is not a word.
For some people it is.
Well, you
potato,
see
potato.
Anyway.
Cockroach.
Yeah,
it's pretty bad.
We could go down a huge rabbit hole of how to say words if you want. I could do this.
I told you I'll never forget Owl City back in the day when he was a big deal. Came to Atlanta, he opened for John Mayer. And I remember, I think it was Ridge, our buddy Ridge, invited me to his birthday at the John Mayer concert, which I would never have gone to by myself. No shade against John Mayer. But Owl City opened and he kept saying, "I love you, Atlanta. Stand up, Atalanta." And Atalanta is like a real word. I think it's like a Greek goddess or location or something. You'll have to forgive me. I'm not an expert in my Greek mythology, but we're not obviously Atalanta. I think Atlanta is a break off of Atalanta, if I'm not mistaken. But I thought that was so funny. And he said it like several times. It's one thing if you say it once. I mean, I'd rather him say that than Hot Atlanta, for sure.
Yeah.
Too many bands haven't caught on to that. That's just a big meme that they have not let go to this day.
What's going on, Hot Atlanta? How we doing in the ATL?
Always funny. Anyway, Jacob, enough of that. I'm excited you're moving down to the big city. And look forward to just seeing you more often in general, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. It's not that we've never hung out these last few years, but it's been a little more difficult than it used to be when we both lived like 5 minutes from each other. So
for sure.
You know, hopefully things will be a little different, but I am excited for just a change of pace, new living environment. Just, you know, a lot of things are changing right now. It's a slightly stressful because, you know, like I'm, you know, I don't have as much free time. Like all my time's like I'm cleaning and packing right now. So just a lot of stuff going on, and all meanwhile, I have to keep working and, you know, going to the gym, and those are things that I can't not do. So, I mean, I guess technically I could not go to the gym, but come on, Garrett, I'm going to the gym.
Dude, this means we could work out together again.
Yeah.
We haven't worked out together since 2013.
Oh my God. almost 10 years.
Yeah. It's been a very long time.
Yeah. I'm excited to see your progress. Everyone in the Discord the other day was making comments about your gains and your thumbnail on YouTube. I'm excited to see where you're at.
I look forward to training with you, Jacob. You're welcome to be my trainer any day.
Oh, yeah. We'll get at it.
Jacob, I imagine in all this time we've been apart, not speaking to each other, you've had plenty of time to play some video games. What have you been playing?
Not a whole lot, if I'm being honest. In terms of variety, I did mention to you before we started that after seeing the Phantom Liberty trailer for Cyberpunk 2077, which is a new DLC coming out for that next year, I have been inspired to finally play Cyberpunk 2077 soon. I haven't actually played it yet. I just downloaded it today. And I think I might jump into it tonight. I bought it like right when it came out. What was it, a couple years ago now? I don't even know. I think it's been over a year. But, you know, just the negative controversy around the game. I just was completely put off to play it at all. I only put in an hour when it came out. But I think now's the time where I got like a solid month or so before games come out that I really want to play. And I feel like right now would be a good time to just kind of dive into it and give it another shot. In terms of the future, over the last month or two since we've last spoke on the podcast, I haven't played a whole lot outside of WoW, I think. But I played WoW in a few different regards. I've still been doing like my main dungeon grinding, getting my score up, playing with some buddies in the guild, all that fun jazz. But I've also started leveling a new mage character, which has been a lot of fun. I've never really played a mage before. It's not really my forte. I'm more of like a dual wielder sort of player, or a melee class player. But a mage is completely ranged. They shoot magic, obviously, akin to a wizard in a lot of other games. And I'm specializing in fire. So like each like magic specialization in the game has like a slightly different way that it plays. So it's been a lot of fun to sort of play that and just play the game a slightly different way. Then I've also jumped into WoW Classic, which is the older version of WoW that's simultaneously being re-released as a separate product with the same subscription to WoW. So there's like retail WoW, then there's Classic WoW. And I just jumped into Classic WoW to play the new Death Knight experience, which is like the new class that comes in Wrath of the Lich King, which is the third expansion, which they're about to launch. But I played that because if you played that, you got a new mount or a free mount in retail, which is what I play. So I just played like an hour of that experience just to get the mount. So now I'm just riding that mount around all the time, which is cool because it looks awesome. I jumped into a little bit more Diablo 3. Not a whole lot to say there. It was a while ago, but it was fun. You know, I'm just at the point now where I really want to play Diablo 4. And that's like the closest I can really get to it. So it's kind of frustrating. I'm thinking that they're going to like release more info here at the Game Awards. I want to predict. That's sort of where my head's at there. I really want to play Diablo 4. And I think that's it, man. Haven't been playing a whole lot outside of WoW. I'm being honest. It's been sort of keeping my attention.
I also look forward to Diablo 4.
It's going to be good. I hope.
It looks cool. So looking forward to playing that. I'm trying to think of anything I'm forgetting in between the time of recording these podcasts. Because I've obviously been playing Last of Us. I put out a video about it the other day. I don't think I've played much other than what's on my list here. A lot of Warzone with Zach and Andy, including MCC. We've kind of like temporarily retired Infinite because we're just kind of bored of it. And it's amazing. We've gone back and forth between MCC and Infinite since Infinite launched. But it's more prevalent than ever just how much more fun classic Halo is, especially Halo 3 compared to Infinite, because Infinite just does, it feels good to play, but it just isn't nearly as fun moment to moment as MCC is. Like we hadn't played MCC in several weeks and we got back into it and played some Big Team Slayer. Zach and I just love going on long Warthog tears and just the crazy moments that ensued doing that within the first 5 minutes of playing that game were just instantly memorable in comparison to everything else we've done in Infinite. And don't get me wrong, Infinite has a pretty unique sandbox with all of its equipment pickups, and some of the weapons are kind of cool. So definitely some, I'd say one in every 10 matches, something kind of crazy will happen in Infinite that's pretty cool. But in MCC, it's way more prevalent and makes it all the more engaging match to match and entertaining and fun consistently. So been really enjoying MCC. We've been winning a lot in Warzone recently, particularly in Rebirth Island, the Resurgence map, the smaller one. That's kind of like our go-to battle royale for now. We dabbled in Apex again. I think Apex is a very fun game. Feels phenomenal to play. I think out of all the shooters these days, Apex feels the best. But there's just like a lot of nitpicks I have with that battle royale compared to others. So Warzone's kind of been the most consistently enjoyable for us. And it's nice too to win at least maybe twice a week. And on a good week, we'll win like three times a week. And we won twice back-to-back the other night, which is really cool. That's been really fun. And between the three of us, we've really kind of developed our communication and like map orientation like really well. Even in like the heat of the tail end of a match when there's two squads left, we hardly have to communicate. And we're just so in sync that it typically works out in our favor. So that's been super fun. But aside from the multiplayer stuff, I played Last of Us Part 1. And then immediately played Part 2 after because I loved Last of Us Part 1 so much. And
that's a lot of Last of Us.
I'll just kind of fill in the gaps of what I left out in my video. If you want to hear like more of my... I didn't go super in-depth with the video I did on YouTube, but it was like a five-minute video of me kind of just splurging about random thoughts I had about it. I think the only thing I have to say is that I was just reminded of how great the first game is. And I've always been fully aware, like, not everyone on the planet loves The Last of Us like Preston and I do and like a lot of hardcore Last of Us fans do. But replaying it on PS5 really did feel like playing it for the first time. Suffice it to say, it's obviously just utterly gorgeous. And even beyond just like the big picture presentation, like, oh yeah, that's clearly beautiful. It's all like Naughty Dog's attention to detail that's always like really captivated me about their production design and graphical fidelity. A lot of it has to do with all the little things. I mentioned the gore in the video. It's just unbelievable how grotesquely violent it is. And it isn't like an off-putting level of violence. It's just so realistic. It's like unbelievable just the way wounds react to like different weapons you use on people and blood puddles and like limbs. And it's crazy how much attention to detail this is in there, especially like given the environment they die on and like where, like if they're on a slope or on a carpet or hardwood or concrete, it's all just completely different. And it's like little things like that in games have always really captivated me. So that's impressive. Another thing I caught the other day, because I'm going for the platinum in part one right now, doing all the collectibles. I was in this in the hotel lobby somewhere toward the beginning of the game, and Joel's hand got dipped in water, and he went to grab this. He's doing the dial in the safe, and there's water running down his hand and down his arm and wetting part of his sleeve. And it's like little things like that are totally unnecessary, but yeah, it's in there.
That's cool.
I just really appreciate moments like that. And all the performances I mentioned in the video are just more impactful than ever. It's just astounding the quality and realistic nature of animations in the game. Really enjoyed playing that, and immediately upon finishing it, I wanted to jump into part two, because you and I had talked about it prior to it coming out, that one of a few motivations they've had, that I think they've even commented on since the game came out, of why they remade it was the transition from one to two is basically seamless. Now, the funny thing being, on PS5, until a PS5 version of Last of Us 2 comes, which may or may not come at this point, I'm not sure, Part 1 actually looks a little better than Part 2 now, which is kind of funny.
Interesting.
Part 2 still looks insanely gorgeous, and it's even more amazing that it was a PS4 game. With all the character models being identical at this point, the transition was totally seamless. It made Part 2 even more impactful for me than it was the first time. And I've always loved Part 2. I loved it the first time I played it. I loved it even more this time, which is awesome. I beat part two again on New Game Plus. That was awesome. And I only had a few more trophies to get, so got the platinum for part two. Now I'm back in part one doing all the tedious collectible trophies to get the platinum for that. And I'm kind of going against my rule, because my rule has always been I'm only going to platinum a game if I just have an absolute amazing time playing it. I have thoroughly enjoyed playing both games, but I just appreciate part one and part two so much, and the heart and soul that we're putting into them. Just out of admiration for them, I want to get the platinum for both. Mm. I'm not loving the collectible experience. I mean, what's fun about the collectibles in Last of Us is that they are worth it, because every single one contributes to the storytelling and world building of the game. Mm-hmm. And I like finding them organically, but going back to find all the ones that I missed, that's a little tedious. But I will say one of the most brilliant additions to the PS5 UI are those cards I hadn't previously used. Preston told me to try those cards out. I don't want to like bore everyone with the details, but essentially, let's say I'm in a chapter of Last of Us and I need to find like four or five collectibles that I missed. I pull up these cards and this list pulls up instantly and shows me in order which ones I need to get. I click on one and there's even a video showing me where it is and then a small written description of like how to get there. And it's so quick to determine awesome. Exactly where I need to go. And you just go in and out of that list without even having to think about it. I don't know if every game's that in depth.
Yeah.
Whoever at Naughty Dog was responsible for setting that up for the PS5 cards killed it, because it's made the trophy hunt so easy and seamless. So that's been a huge help.
I imagine a lot of like Sony games are going to be like that with their trophies. Like you'll be able to figure out exactly.
Yeah, definitely first party trophies, stuff.
Like how to do them.
Yeah. So it's been awesome. I've loved that feature. That's what I've been spending most of my time doing. I've loved it, man. Loved part one and two. So that is the extent of what I've been playing.
What about, have you tried any of the new Warzone that's on like beta right now?
Yeah, so that brings us to our news. I have not played the Modern Warfare 2 beta yet. I'll break it down a little bit. Again, I don't want to bore everyone. If like hardcore Call of Duty people can find that info. I'm actually extremely excited for Modern Warfare 2. I'll just kind of touch on some of the high points. The PS4, PS5 beta is available to those who have pre-ordered right now. And then starting, we were recording this on Saturday the 17th. As of the 18th, which is Sunday, the open PlayStation beta goes live. So then everyone can jump in and try it. And then the cross-play Xbox PC beta starts next weekend, and then everyone can play for a few days. Modern Warfare 2, I am very stoked for. I'm still a unapologetic, massive fan of Modern Warfare 2019. I think it's excellent. It's not a perfect game. There's like some nitpicks I've had with it over the years, but I've mostly loved that game. So naturally, I'm very excited for Modern Warfare 2. And there is actually a ton they've changed with Modern Warfare 2. A lot of it's good. Some of it's questionable. And all like the big Call of Duty YouTubers, I've been watching all of them give their thoughts on it. And they're all kind of in unison about a lot of the things they're concerned about. I think everyone's in agreement that there's nothing inherently bad about some of the decisions they're making with the sequel. It's just new ideas that may or may not work out in the long run. From what I've read, supposedly Infinity Ward is intentionally including these versions of these features in the beta to see how people react to it and are considering evolving it and tweaking it up until release day. I guess I'll start with Warzone 2.0, because that's like the big mode, obviously, because Warzone's still very popular. So what's different about this primarily is that there are factions on the map now that are NPCs that you can encounter that mainly defend what are called strongholds. And if you played Hunt Showdown, it's kind of a similar idea where there are strongholds or big buildings that house like better loot and more viable equipment that are defended by NPCs that you have to kill in order to get it, which I've always thought is a cool idea. That's actually something I'm hoping to see, not to go off on a huge tangent, but in the eventual Halo Infinite Battle Royale is have, because the sandbox and Halo campaigns are so fun fighting aliens, that it'd be fun to like approach a Covenant base and kill a bunch of aliens to find better loot would be cool.
Oh, definitely.
But that's kind of the same idea in Warzone 2.0, is that that's currently a thing. And I don't want to go on a huge tangent again, but just to branch off that for a second, I think that's also playing into the DMZ mode they're adding, which was rumored, but now is confirmed to something I was really excited about, is their take on like Escape from Tarkov style of gameplay in Call of Duty. So DMZ is very similar to Tarkov in that you drop into the map or enter the map. The whole point of it is to loot and get as much loot as you can and then get out alive so you can keep that loot. And then you progressively upgrade a single character with like weapons and attachments and a million other things. I haven't gone too in-depth on that mode yet, but I'm hoping it's close to, if not as in-depth as Tarkov, where it's kind of like hyper-realistic and these faction leaders will give you quests to do while you're in the map. And there's real players and also NPCs that are supposedly really difficult to kill and can kill you pretty easily. So it's meant to be more grounded and tactical, very much Tarkov-like, where you go in and the whole point is to find good loot and get out alive. So that's why people think they're including those factions in Warzone as well, just to kind of play into that. On top of just experimenting with a new idea. There are currently no longer, well, at first people thought there were definitely no loadouts anymore in Warzone 2.0, but apparently that's false. Infinity Ward was just trying out no loadouts for this beta to see how people would react, but apparently loadouts are returning, so that's nice.
I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, I haven't played Warzone enough to really have a solid opinion. I mean, I played it a lot when it first came out, but I mean, I like the loadouts. Like, you don't just start with them. Like, you have to get them, right? Like, you have to call them in.
Yeah.
I always sort of liked how, like, Apex was too, where you use what you find, you know, and that's about it. I don't really know which way's better.
That's where I'm at, because I'm 50-50 on loadouts in games, because sometimes I'll drop into a map and find some guns I really like and not even care about my loadout. Even if my loadout's really good, I'll find stuff that I just prefer over my loadout. And there are other matches where I don't find this loot that isn't nearly as effective, and I'll go with my loadout instead. But a lot of the big YouTubers I've been watching have claimed that a big part of Warzone's identity that was one of the contributing factors to separating it from other battle royales was that loadout feature. Speaking of new ideas that I think is pretty sick as well is the new gulag is 2-on-2. And the idea being, when you get in there, it's you and another random player are on a team versus two other guys on a team on apparently maps that are, I haven't seen too much of it yet, but maps that are a little more open, a little more tactical, so it isn't just kind of like small and random and instant death. You can kind of play like a little mini match for a second. But I like the idea that two randoms against two other randoms are temporarily teammates. And yeah, if your team wins, you and that random guy drop back in and then you're enemies again. It's pretty cool.
So wait, hold on. Like, what if you and one of your teammates in the game die? Can you be matched against them? Can that happen?
I doubt it. I'm sure they have a system figured out where you'll wait turns like the other Warzone.
Wouldn't that be funny?
But I think that's really cool that they're doing that. Now, another thing people are questioning that they don't like as much is that there are also factions in the Gulag, like a couple of NPCs that are there to kind of disrupt the firefight, which I think I like the idea of them being on the big map, but I don't really understand why they're in the Gulag currently. It doesn't really make sense to me as to why they would need to be there. Again, I haven't played it, so I'm not sure how I'd react to it because I haven't experienced it yet. But on paper, that doesn't sound as interesting to me.
Yeah, maybe it's just to keep people from running around like a maniac. I don't know.
Yeah, that could be it. But that's a thing. Another thing is the big ring will temporarily split into three mini rings.
Hmm.
So as the big ring's closing, when it gets toward the mid game, it'll temporarily split into three. So there's, instead of all the groups converging into one big circle, they're all split into three different ones and kind of whittle each other off. And then it becomes a big circle again toward the end.
Interesting.
I think their idea, people are speculating, it's meant to like reinvigorate the mid game. Because, you know, at the beginning, it's always really intense usually. And then at the end, it's really intense. But that mid game, you kind of just like, not always, some matches are more exciting than others, but you're typically just kind of floating around looking for people to kill.
Yeah.
Where this is meant to make engagements more frequent, which is what I like about the Resurgence smaller mode, is it's constant action. I think this is meant to kind of keep the pace and action flowing up until the very end, which I think is pretty cool.
It's worth a shot.
They've also changed the armor system, where you can only carry two armor pieces, and in order to have a third, you have to find a vest to have a third armor piece.
I like that.
Now there's a backpack system that's more in line with how Blackout was in PUBG, where instead of like, oh, I've capped my assault rifle ammo, I can't carry anymore. Now, like, if you want to carry more than what you normally could carry, you could just drop like a random item. Like, I want to drop all my sniper ammo to make more room for assault ammo. Or I want to drop all this crap to carry even more armor than I normally could. So people are saying it adds a lot more player expression and caters to people's different styles of play, which I think sounds like a good idea. People are a little upset that it's a little tedious and isn't quite as intuitive and fast-paced as looting in current Warzone, but everyone has collectively said it may just be a thing that they need to get used to and may end up really enjoying. I think I'll like that long-term. I just got to play it to find out for myself. The swimming mechanics in there that isn't as prevalent in 6v6, but in Warzone, you can swim and dive underwater and shoot your sidearm underwater. Kind of cool. Boats and vehicles are more destructible in that you can blow off tires and parts of the car rather than just blowing it up altogether.
That's cool.
Helicopters are cool too. You can, in the big helicopters, if one of your teammates is flying it, you can actually walk around freely in the back of one versus just kind of like switching seats. You can freely walk around it and jump out at will. So you're kind of always in that movement mode. Gunsmith is a little different now. Also sounds really cool, where instead of having to grind each weapon from scratch, let's say you're really into assault rifles and you unlock the red dot site for assault rifle builds, that red dot is available on every assault rifle variation. So let's say like your AK assault build, your M4 assault build, blah, 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 blah. You can use that red dot on all of them. Now you can change out. Now it's even more in depth. Like you can make an M4 assault rifle into like an M4 submachine gun based on that main core you put into it.
That's cool.
It's even more in depth, but I think it's cool that you don't have to grind like, oh, I have my red dot for my M4, but I don't have it for my AK or whatever. Yeah. You have it for both. It's less grindy, but it also adds a lot more creativity the way you can kit them all out.
Sure, sure.
Pretty sick.
I like that.
I've heard the 6v6 maps aren't nearly as cluttered visually as Modern Warfare 2019. I will say in 2019, it's something I hadn't really, I think subconsciously I'd noticed, but I hadn't really put into words, was the maps weren't necessarily laid out in a complex way, but they're designed in a way where it's just insane in that there's windows everywhere, different levels you can go to. They're just cluttered with like all kinds of stuff. It looked pretty. It just kind of was like a little distracting. And these maps are a little more simplified and laid out to where you can spot people easier. The game's also a lot more colorful than 2019. 2019 was more like grayscale and desaturated, where this is definitely very poppy and colorful.
I love that.
Which is a lot like original Modern Warfare 2 was also like very colorful and fun. And everyone has said, even though all these systems are pretty in depth, they said it feels a little more arcadey and fun than 2019 did. And mostly everything I've heard is very positive. I'm going to play it a little bit tomorrow, hopefully. I'm going to definitely play on PC ultimately, but I'm going to try it on PS5 first.
Yeah, I might download it. Why not? Or do you have to pre-order, or can you just, is it free?
From what I understand, tomorrow you can just download the open beta. Okay. You don't have to pre-order.
I'm doing that.
I'm excited to try it. So I don't think there's anything else at the moment to comment on that I'm forgetting. I'm very excited to try. I love it. It's kind of sad for me too, because I love everything I'm hearing about it. It's not a surprise all this content's packed into it within the first 2 weeks. I mean, of course, campaign, standard multiplayer launches day one, 2 weeks later, Warzone launches, and I think shortly after that, the DMZ mode launches. It's because there's like a dozen studios all contributing to this game under the Infinity Ward umbrella, which is a shame Halo can't get the same treatment, because Halo should have had like this big style of reveal event and support since day one, but they just haven't had it. And that's why Infinite's pretty much been a catastrophe since the beginning. I will say I had that old familiar feeling at the watching some of the Call of Duty Next event, where all those streamers were invited to play Warzone for the first time, and then the panel of people talking about all the new features. Just reminded me of like the launch of Halo 3 back in the day and the launch of older Call of Duty games. Like, I love that feeling of everyone that's into those games is all collectively getting excited and like celebrating it together is a cool feeling.
Yeah.
Two other modes I wanted to comment on before I forget that sound really fun to me. There's a straight ripoff of Rainbow Six Siege called Prisoners, where there's a defending team defending hostages and there's an attacking team. And there's a lot of nuance to that. They've kind of like experimented with new ideas for that style of gameplay, but it sounded really fun. And there's one other one, I can't remember what it was, but it sounded really creative and excited to try it. So everything I've heard sounds cool to me. I think the last thing worth mentioning is the perk system. Apparently, you can select your perks, but you don't have them at the start of a match. You have to earn them throughout the match, which is kind of strange.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Maybe it's only certain perks. Maybe you can start with Overkill, but for example, if you wanted Last Stand, for example, you don't have it at the beginning. You have to earn it through kills or your score or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what the motivation is there. Someone made the point, it's like, it sounds like trying to reinvent the wheel. Like, what really are you accomplishing by doing this? But people just keep saying, right now it's weird. Maybe it'll make sense after we play a little bit longer.
That's kind of weird.
Again, it's one of those things where I'm like, that doesn't sound bad per se. It just is questionable. Oh, score streaks and kill streaks, you can swap at will now, versus, you know, every Call of Duty's either had kill streaks or score streaks. Now you can swap them interchangeably.
So if you pick a, like, can you only do score streaks and only do kill streaks, or can you interchange them?
I think within a match, you can change it at will.
But what if you like want to do one score streak, one kill streak, and then another score streak? Because you get three, right?
I'm not sure if people have experimented that much.
Okay.
That's another thing they've been doing. Yeah, that's kind of like the big umbrella of all the big talking points, but I haven't played it yet, so I can't talk about it too much, but it looks really fun. And I've always loved Call of Duty. I've said that before. Did not like Cold War very much. I didn't think it was bad, but definitely didn't enjoy Vanguard. Also not bad, just not my flavor of Call of Duty I'm into, but Infinity Ward's always done top tier Call of Duty games, and this looks right in line.
Have for a while now, yeah.
With the excellence of their Call of Duty, so I'm stoked to try it.
Let's not forget about Ghost.
Right.
That was Infinity Ward, right? I'm pretty sure.
I was listening to one guy that said this Modern Warfare feels like what Ghost was trying to be. I'm not sure what he meant by that.
I don't know what that means either, but it's a bold statement.
So it looks great, though. I'm excited to try. I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit next week if we get our hands on it.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I want to try it out tomorrow.
Is there anything from what I just mentioned that you wanted to talk about more or had questions about before we move on? Or any thoughts you may have?
Do you know anything about like how guns feel, like the gunplay in the game? Is it a lot? Is it akin to Modern Warfare 2019? Is it like just like that, or is it a little more, like, just how does it feel from what you've watched?
Most people have said it feels extremely similar to 2019, which I think is a good thing. So I think the gunplay is great in that game.
Oh, yeah.
Some have said some of the weapons have a shocking amount of
recoil.
That's particularly controller players, though. Like, mouse and keyboard recoils never bothered me. A lot of people have actually said the time to kill feels a little high. Again, I haven't played yet, so I'm not sure. But, oh, yeah, they also got rid of slide canceling. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but slide canceling made people move around like just lunatics in Warzone.
Yeah.
Which wasn't always a problem because I really enjoyed the slide mechanic. And it's back in this game. It just doesn't function exactly the same. You can't cancel it anymore because people would, like, mid-slide cancel it. And you can, like, do all these maneuvers to, like, quickly move around.
Yeah, you could, like, have momentum then stop or something.
Yeah, it was strange. And that's gone now. And most people are happy about that, myself included. I've always preferred movement in games that, especially in, like, a military shooter. I know it's not entirely realistic, but I'd rather it be a little more grounded than crazy and out of control.
Yeah.
You can also dolphin dive again. So they brought that back.
Can you still, like, go prone, like, any Call of Duty?
Yeah.
You just can. Like, go prone real quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the dolphin dive immediately dives you into prone. Yeah. So
that's definitely how I, like, in my later stages of Call of Duty, once I was not as bad as I once was, I would always, like, drop shot. That's what I would always do. But I've never been that great of a Call of Duty player. My peak was probably 2019 Modern Warfare. I mean, that was the last one that I really played seriously. And by seriously, I mean, like, every night when it first came out. I'm actually really excited to play Modern Warfare 2 because, like, I kind of miss when a Call of Duty comes out and, like, playing that multiplayer for, like, however long it's fun. Like, it's just, like, an experience you don't get anywhere else. It's, like, right when that comes out, everyone's talking about it. Everyone's playing it. And it's fun for, like, that little chunk of time. So I'm looking forward to that.
Same, man. I really enjoyed watching the reveal event. And I love that it's launching with really rich, deep content within the first couple of weeks. Is kind of unheard of for the last few years with shooters in particular. And I've been starved for a fun shooter that's rich with content that a lot of people are into since Infinite kind of tanked. I mean, Infinite still exists, but it's just a shell of what it should be.
And it wasn't, like, with tons of content. It was just the multiplayer.
Exactly. So I'm excited that a lot of people are excited about this and that it's seemingly turning out very well. And all these fun, not only just 6v6 modes. I hope gunfight's back. I haven't heard anyone mention gunfight because I love that mode. But if gunfight's in there, that's a big one for me. And then DMZ and Warzone. It's just those three styles of gameplay that you can just play at will. Just sounds so fun to me. It's like all that content within one game sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So they're also going to have a map editor that I forgot about. It's like Forge for Call of Duty. So that could also be really awesome to see the creations people come up with and just make it like the legs of the game go on for a long time.
Probably the thing that you said that I'm most interested in is just, like, the brighter colored maps. There's less areas to look around when you're, like, traversing a map. Like, I don't want to have to, like, go down the right lane and then have to, like, check five or six different angles where someone could appear before I move forward. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want to have to check, like, maybe one or two or three. I can handle that. Yeah, I'm really excited. I think it's going to be fun.
Same. This will be the first Call of Duty. I didn't go super hard in 2019. I've definitely played it a lot over the years, but this will be the first Call of Duty in a long time where I'm, like, really into it and that I want to level up and I want to eventually prestige and, like, do all that stuff and, like, focus on particular guns. So I'm going to have a lot of fun with it, I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
Leading into all the great single player games we have coming toward the end of the year as well. So it'll be a really good bridge to those games coming later. That being said, talking about games coming later, the rest of our news is in no particular order. We're just talking about stuff that we're excited about and just want to comment on. Notably, Hogwarts Legacy that was delayed till February, which is a bummer because I think that would have been a great holiday season game to play. Like playing around Christmas, dude, would have been awesome.
Yeah.
It's a bummer it was delayed, but it is what it is. Quidditch is not happening, which was no surprise to hear because I always knew that was a big ask, but it's still disappointing to hear that it's not in there.
It is. Maybe the next one.
Maybe one day DLC, because that's the thing. When they put the game
DLC
out, I can, like, maybe like a year later, they're like, hey, here's Quidditch. If you want to play Quidditch, it could be kind of cool. I'd love to see them try it. I understand that's really complex, but still sad it's not in there. I was going to ask, have you seen any of the house gameplay they've revealed? Little B-roll clips of students walking into, like, Ravenclaw, Hufflepuff.
Yeah. I watched all the previews of each of the different houses. Yes. I thought that was cool.
They look beautiful.
Yeah, they're each have unique things about them. I'm really into it.
They also said that you can just straight up pick your house, which also like isn't that. A big surprise. Again, I was hoping for a little more depth to that, but it's always been a fair argument. I get that even if they had that system I mentioned where it's like you do a series of quests and dialogue options at the beginning, that if they were written well enough, you would kind of give you the gray area if you're not exactly sure which direction you're going. But what event those decisions in the beginning would influence which house you're sorted into. That would have been cool. It's a fair argument when people have said that, you know, you could still manipulate that to end up in the house you really want to be in, which is fair. So to pick, I get it. It's all good. What are you going to pick first?
I don't know, man. Like, I think Slytherin.
That's what Preston said.
Yeah, I want to do Slytherin.
Cool.
Like just my gut instinct is to go Gryffindor, because of course you want to be Gryffindor. Either Slytherin or Ravenclaw. Probably Slytherin.
Yeah, I'm pretty dead set on Gryffindor just because I've always fantasized about being a Gryffindor student since I was reading the Harry Potter book. So I'll start with that. But if this game's as fun as I'm hoping it'll be, I'll inevitably want to replay it as a different house at some point.
I mean, hey, you never know. Like, maybe you'll meet a good character from one of the other houses before you actually choose, like when you're just getting to the school, and you'll want to join that house.
That's like influences your choice. Yeah. Maybe. As long as Diagon Alley's in there and the Hogwarts Express, I would love, because that's like a big part of like the Hogwarts experience to me, are those two things.
Mm-hmm.
I hope something like that's in there. But aside from that, everything I've seen looks awesome. So still can't wait to play it.
You put dumb exclusive quest here. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. I almost missed that. And it kind of bridges into the next topic we're going to talk about for a minute, was the irony of the Sony and Xbox exclusive debate going on right now, particularly with Call of Duty. How Jim Ryan's like supposedly losing his mind about the idea of Microsoft potentially withholding Call of Duty from PlayStation in the future, while PlayStation has obviously had exclusives for years that have withheld certain IP from Xbox, notably Spider-Man. I mean, that's a big one for at least the American audience. That's a big one. Not to mention all the Japanese studios.
And this is all wrapped up in like the idea of Microsoft acquiring Activision Blizzard eventually, which is Call of Duty.
Every time I see now exclusive content for any game, it just annoys me. I still believe at the end of the day there should be exclusive games and studios to publishers, because it really does. I think it's healthy for the industry overall. But when you have stuff like this, like a multi-platform game like Hogwarts, having an exclusive quest to PlayStation, that's just so stupid to me.
Yeah, it's
like
completely unnecessary.
With a dumb Avengers game where Spider-Man's only coming to the PS4 version. Yeah. Like, that's so dumb, dude. If it's multi-platform, all of the content should go to all the platforms.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, too. People have said, like, it's at the end of the day, it's so stupid because maybe one out of a billion people would be like, you know what? Because that game has an exclusive quest, I'm going to buy a PS5 instead of an Xbox. Just because of that one quest. So dumb, dude.
Yeah.
Like, so I hate that.
You're not going to buy a different console. Yeah, just like what you said, like, no one's going to let their decision on buying a console from a quest from a game. That doesn't matter at all. And usually those quests, they're not even that good. Like, they're just
it probably is like an hour, maybe 30 minutes. It's something so
it's like,
dumb,
oh, that was kind of cool. Or like I remember back in Destiny when they would do like an exclusive weapon or a map or something. And the map usually just didn't feel that cool. It was just like a generic map, and then like the gun was just like, they couldn't make the gun overpowered or anything because the other, like, Xbox wouldn't have the weapon. Like, what were they gonna do? I mean, but back then you couldn't even play with, like, it wasn't cross-gen, like you couldn't, or cross like you couldn't play, Sony couldn't play with Xbox, so it's completely different now, so things are slightly different in that regard. But it just never felt good. I mean, if you're gonna do exclusives, like, it's got to be a game that you can only get on that platform. And even then, I'm not a huge fan of exclusives in general. I just wish everything was on everything. But I get it. Like, Sony's making their own games, their own studios that they own. They're putting them only on their console that they're trying to sell. It's not like
it also gives consoles like a strong identity too. Really differentiates like their just style.
Sure. It gives the console an identity. Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought seeing that stupid, I feel bad for the developers too, because it really is like a publisher situation and investor situation, where it's like, oh, we have to have an exclusive quest, and the PR people and marketing people on the Hogwarts development team that are responsible for announcing that stuff. I just feel bad for them because I imagine there are very few people at those studios that are stoked on the idea that our game that we've poured our hearts and souls into for years, here's a quest to just one console and like F the rest of you. It's like not even up to them with those decisions. So feel bad for them.
I mean, most certainly it's got to be Sony coming to the table and being like, hey, we'll give you a big chunk of money. Just let us say this is an exclusive. We'll put a quest in there. Let us market it for you. Because they want that big push. Like, they want to advertise that game with PlayStation being at the end or at the beginning of the trailer. That's all they care about.
I look forward to it. I know they've mentioned that they are definitely implementing DualSense features for these spells. And there's so much potential for that. Just, like, all the different ways spells can feel based on how you're using it. Like, I'm trying to think of something creative they could do for Wingardium Leviosa where you're levitating something. How they can make the controller feel. Like, maybe it's constantly whirring in your hands. Yeah, like, rumbling gently or something.
A very gentle rumble. Rubble.
I wonder if they could do something where it's like in one handle, you kind of feel like this. I don't know how the rumble works, the DualSense, but it kind of makes it feel like it's floating or something. It could be cool. Because they did a lot of great stuff in Last of Us Part 1 that was really unique that I love. So I always look forward to seeing what studios can do with that.
Yeah, I need to play more PS5 games. Like, I haven't really taken advantage of the DualSense yet. Like, I really haven't played that much.
You need to try... especially tomorrow, I'm assuming, because every Call of Duty that's come to PS5 so far has had DualSense features, especially like the adaptive triggers. I'm excited to see what Modern Warfare 2 feels like tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that I want to play it on controller, obviously, but it is cool to like just try that. Anyway, yeah, exclusive quests are stupid. speaking of Sony, the State of Play happened recently. That was pretty solid. It had a lot of cool announcements, notably the God of War trailer, which we'll talk about in a sec. But another one I wanted to mention was the Rise of the Ronin trailer. That looks pretty cool from Team Ninja. A mix of over-the-top, like, Neo-style combat. I know they have their Ninja Gaiden in their history and a bunch of other great games. But mixed with the open-world idea of Ghost of Tsushima. A lot of potential there. I think I haven't loved every Team Ninja game I played over the years. I didn't really ever get into Neo. I never played Neo 2. But this looks pretty cool. I'm going to keep an eye on it. And I thought it was just a great trailer and it looks pretty fun. So look forward to seeing more of that. You said you watched the trailer before we started recording, right?
I did. Yeah, seems cool. It's not like something I'm dying to play. It might be something that I do play, but it didn't really like catch my eye.
Team Ninja, they're a multi-platform studio, aren't they? Are they owned by Sony?
No.
Okay, because I was going to say, if they were a first party, I would be surprised that Sony greenlit a game like that, because it's obviously going to be very different from Ghost of Tsushima, but it's not totally different in terms of its world and time period and everything. So, not to mention what Assassin's Creed is doing with their take on, I think it's Japan is what they're doing eventually. It's called Codename Red. We'll talk about that later too, but that's a whole nother topic. Mm-hmm. But the God of War trailer, I think everyone has agreed, was awesome. I think that trailer was phenomenal. It definitely got me more hype for the game.
Yeah, me too. Not that I needed to be any more hyped.
Yeah, I'd still like to see just a little more gameplay. They've been really shady about gameplay. Everything I've seen looks great, but I'm surprised they haven't shown us just a little bit more. If they don't do a full-on showcase for God of War prior to release, I don't think that'll be a problem. I'd rather see less at the end of the day anyway. Mm-hmm. But that trailer definitely got me more excited than I was initially. So again, I still hope I'm wrong about it being a little disappointing. I hope it blows our minds when we play it.
Yeah, I loved seeing that clash at the end with Thor.
That's awesome. Dude, so sick.
I can't wait for that moment in the game. I'm just a big Thor fan.
Yeah, I love that line too. Kratos just has so many cool lines of, you know, death can have me when it earns me. So sick.
I think one of the things I'm really looking forward to as well is just Atreus's development in this game. I really want to see like how the story plays out and how he has sort of grown since we last saw him in the first game and how he sort of, what his role is in this game. That's what I'm really interested in.
Yeah, same. It surprises me even more that this is the end of the Norse saga. So it's coming to a conclusion already. I don't know if they're going to branch off of this storyline into something else, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens for sure.
Are we going to encounter, is it Zeus or?
Odin.
Odin, thank you. Yeah. Zeus was
Zeus is very dead.
Yeah.
Kratos took care of Zeus.
Yeah.
God of War 3.
What else is there? Like, what other, where else could they go?
The Norse gods?
Yeah.
You mean other realms, maybe?
They did Greek, Norse, like.
Maybe Egyptian?
That would be weird, but I'm for it. I don't know anything about, like, other kinds of gods. Those are like the two most popular.
Yeah, Greek and Norse are the big ones. We'll see. I don't know.
I'm all for it, though. The first game was just so good. I imagine this one will be equally as good, or if not better. It's hard to imagine it wouldn't be.
I definitely hope for the best. I tried replaying the first one a couple months ago. Maybe it just wasn't a good time, but I couldn't get into it. I played like the first hour and wasn't really feeling it. But not that I thought it was bad. I just wasn't in the mood, which I'm kind of glad, because if I played the first one and went right into the second, it may affect my enjoyment of the sequel a little bit. So I'm going to hold off. Definitely watch a story recap, though. I remember all the major points, but some of the smaller moments I'd like a reminder of.
Yeah, I think they also confirmed that you're going to visit every single realm this time. Like, you didn't get to go to all of them in the first game. And when you did, you didn't, like there were two of them where you couldn't even really explore. They were just, like, mini-game sort of realms. But I think they said in each one you're going to at least be able to walk around and do cool stuff in them, so...
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, while we're on the Sony train, it was announced recently that Resident Evil 4 Remake is also coming to PS4, which is previously not a thing, but apparently it has been.
I didn't know that.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, and I think there's a fair argument to be said that games that have come to both PS4 and PS5 have been held back a little bit, but we can't really comment on that too much because we've yet to see an extended gameplay demo of RE4, but I cannot wait to see more. I have extremely high hopes for that.
Oh, yeah.
Very excited to see it, so...
You think I should play 3 Remake?
You can. That's by no means a bad game. It's just not nearly as good to me as the RE2 Remake.
Yeah. Like, am I going to be disappointed if I play 3 when I think about 2?
No. I think it's still totally worth playing.
Okay.
It's not remotely a bad game. It's just right after 2, it was a little underwhelming.
It's just always been one of those games that I've been on the fence about. Like, and I heard it's not very long either.
It wouldn't be a waste of time, I'll say that, Jacob.
Okay. It's probably pretty discounted at this point, too.
Plus, you have all that other Resident Evil content coming this fall with the Ethan Winters third person mode.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That DLC with his daughter.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I really liked Village. I thought it was good.
I thought it was fun, too. I didn't really want to play it more than once, but
yeah,
it was fun.
I enjoyed my playthrough of it, though. I know this is just completely off topic, but I just really loved the different themes that the game tackled. And just in it wasn't really one setting. It was just one little village. It was just fun to sort of mix up the gameplay in that regard. Some were better than others, but
it's like a horror theme park, a bunch of different haunted houses with different styles of gameplay in each.
Yeah.
Speaking of horror games, Callisto Protocol. This is a while ago now. They had a demo at GDC that was just pretty bad. And Preston and I both talked about it recently, and we were kind of like taken aback by how mediocre it looked. Yeah. I think the reason was we've speculated that maybe whoever, I can't remember who's publishing this game, said like, we need a demo GDC, put something out. And they just sent like random B-roll to like be presented. And whoever was recording this B-roll like spammed this telekinesis ability just over and over and over again. And it made it look just really stupid. And the game didn't look bad graphically, just gameplay looked kind of silly because of that. And then they show this like really extended waterfall quick time event. We were flowing down a waterfall that was like straight out of 2013, like Uncharted 2 or something. They're like, yeah, you know, we wanted to show that we have like cinematic crazy moments in this game. And I'm like, that's great, dude, but I've seen that a billion times in like 30 other games. So it was just a questionable decision to show that gameplay at the event, because I think the first demo they showed was outstanding compared to this one. So it was just weird to see something that looked, did not seem to show the game in a great light the second time they showed it. And then on top of that, Glenn Schofield put out that tweet a while back where he's like, oh, you know, like we're skipping meals and like doing this and like just grinding hard to get this game done in time. And I genuinely think he just has not paid attention to like the whole grind culture debate over the last couple of years. He probably straight up just didn't even notice that was a thing.
Probably.
And he strikes me as one of those people that said that genuinely out of like passion. Like he meant that as like a positive thing. Like, yeah, you know, like
he's like proud of his team. He's really into the work that they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, because I can wholeheartedly relate to where people with that mindset come from, because there have been moments in my work life, including Preston's, where I've had to like kill myself physically to get something done on time. And if you're working with good people on something you genuinely care about, like that's a pretty like fulfilling experience temporarily. I don't think that's something anyone should ever do consistently. But every now and then, like I'm more than willing to like go really hard to get something done, especially when I care about it. And I think that's the place he was coming from. But of course, everyone on Twitter immediately attacks him. It's like, oh, you're awful. And like, you're treating your people horribly. And he had to have this public apology. And supposedly he's since met with his team to like refine that work-life balance, which is a good thing. But it's just a bummer because there's grind in every single workplace to some degree. And some are obviously worse than others. It's not always a healthy thing. But I, at the end of the day, I've never thought that grind is inherently bad. Unless it's it goes on for too long and people are genuinely suffering because of it and like it costs them their career or like their health, that's not a good thing. But temporarily, I don't think there's anything wrong with grind, and I think that's the place he was coming from. So it's just kind of like a bad 1-2 punch of like a mediocre demo and then immediately having to follow up with that whole situation.
Yeah.
So that's still one of my most anticipated games in spite of that. But
yeah, still.
Yeah, for sure.
And also, that's like Jason Schreier's like whole... That's like his mission right now is to...
Yeah, that's like his favorite thing to call people out on.
Yeah, he's trying to just completely eliminate it by, you know, giving it shining light on it, giving it bad press, or just any press, whether or not it's bad or not is up to you, the reader. But it's just a reality of the industry. It's not great. I mean, I wish these people didn't have to bust their ass all the time. It sucks. It makes a lot of people not want to be developers, if I had to guess. I mean, some people just really, really like to work, and that's what fulfills them, and that's what they want to do every single day of their life. But other people, like someone like me, I'm not necessarily that driven to do work all the time. Like, I much more like free time. Like, I like doing things that I really enjoy that have nothing to do with work all the time. So something like that would just completely turn me off to a profession like that. It's just all the time work, 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 grind, 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 you know, 16, 18 hour days. No way. Not doing that.
Yeah, it's a complicated situation because I'm actually in the opposite end where if I were, I mean, I will never be a game developer. I know very little about it, but I know that if that's a skill set I had and a passion I had, I would be way into that. Like I said, temporarily, like if it says, well, let's say like the last 4 to 6 months of finishing a game on time is grind season. Like, I'd be way down for that. And I think I love to work as well. And I grind pretty frequently with what I do as well. So it isn't, I mean, some days I'm sitting at a computer for hours on end, and then others I'm like out shooting something with a great team for hours on end. It's like either way, like if we're grinding, doing something, we all collectively care about that. Now I'm like way into that kind of style of work. But again, temporarily. My understanding is not every studio, but some like the healthy studios like Naughty Dog, for example, like the first couple of years developing a game are like pretty standard work-life balance. And then maybe the last several months is like crazy grind season. Yeah. I personally don't find anything very wrong with that. But as you have to imagine, there are definitely developers that have voiced their problem with that. But you got to believe there's also people that have a mindset like I do where they're totally fine with that. And the complication being, these are massive budget game, massive AAA games with huge budgets, with multiple investors and publishers that have very certain expectations. And that's just, at the end of the day, that's just the reality of the situation. Like, you have to fulfill those commitments, and delays cause issues and everything. So very complicated, intense situation in the games industry that I don't think is all bad. Of course, can definitely see improvement, but... This was one of those rare exceptions where I genuinely think he's of the mindset I have, where it's like, oh, that last several months, we're killing ourselves, but like, we're going to get it done and we're passionate about it. Can't wait for you guys to play it. And then it just gets slaughtered by Twitter. So something I just wanted to mention, but still stoked to play that game and see more. Hopefully everything's better than that last demo I saw.
Definitely.
There was another event, the Ubisoft event, where they mentioned Assassin's Creed Infinity or Infinite, whatever it's called, Mirage, which I'm really excited about, and then there are other three big open world games that are coming. Infinity, I don't really want to comment on too much. It's just like all existing Assassin's Creed games with like microtransactions or something all under one roof. It was so much info about that I just couldn't care less. I'm excited about Mirage, which is more in line with the original style of gameplay.
Give me major assassin vibes. That's what I want.
Totally. Open. It takes place in one city. It's like a 15 to 20 hour experience. The parkour system's back. Much more in line with Unity's parkour system, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I've just been so over like this whole Assassin's Creed becoming like Witcher and like these different period of times. Like, I just want Assassin's Creed to be what it should have always been. Just an assassin doing assassin things in a city. Like, just give me an assassin that does cool stuff and give me a good story revolving around it. That's all I want. And that's what we need to get back to.
I can see why they're doing both still, because Valhalla was the best-selling Assassin's Creed game of all time, and all those big open-world games have sold exceptionally well. Mm-hmm. So they're going to keep doing that, and they've mentioned they're going to do that with Code Red, or Codename Red. There's the other one that's taking place. I can't remember what the other one is, but the one I'm most interested in out of the big open-world ones is the Codename Hex that takes place during like the Salem Witch Trials or something. Yeah. That sounds sick.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to see that. But I've also not enjoyed the big open world games. I'd rather see more of what they're doing with Mirage. But I think they mentioned at this event that they're going to put this one out. And if it does as well as I'm hoping it does, they will also develop styles like that alongside their big open world games to kind of satisfy both audiences.
Yeah.
So I think that's awesome.
So yeah, you're right. The Japanese one is Codename Red. Codename Hex is the one with the witch hunts and horror. And Codename Jade is the one that is set in ancient China.
Oh, okay, cool.
Oh, wait. Codename Jade is the one on mobile.
Got it, okay.
Which is one that people are not thrilled about because it's going to be a mobile game. I thought there was another one.
When does it say Mirage is coming? Is it early next year?
Not early next year. It'll be like
just sometime
holiday.
Next year?
Yeah.
Oh, dang, it's a while away then.
Oh, yeah. This year they're focusing on just the last chapter of Valhalla.
The only thing I hope I have for Mirage is that it's very similar to original style gameplay with a little more creativity with the assassinations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A few options to take out targets rather than just like shooting them or walking up behind them and stabbing them in the back. Like more Dishonored style where there's more creative options to kill people would be cool. Mm-hmm.
That would be cool.
Overall, though, I cannot wait to see that in action.
Yeah, I've been wanting like a good solid action game. That's sort of why I'm going back to Cyberpunk. Like, I just feel like I've been like sorely lacking like variety in my gaming lately. Yeah. So I just need new stuff, and it sounds good to me.
Well, there's also the Nintendo State of Play that I know is a meme now, and everyone noticed even in the moment that it was a farm simulator event for like so many farm simulation games. And I couldn't believe how the lack of self-awareness Nintendo had to announce all those farming games in one event. And they're probably laughing about that because those games, from what I understand, sell incredibly well. The only weird thing to me is that they all look so similar. And one of them was a straight up Harvest Moon, A Wonderful Life remake is what it looked like. It was called Something of the Seasons. Different title, but it looked exactly like Harvest Moon, A Wonderful Life from GameCube that Preston and I used to play. Yeah. Still not going to play it, but a lot of farming games announced, but the big one, of course, was The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, which is the follow-up to Breath of the Wild. And
huge.
A brief trailer, but it looked pretty cool. A lot of elevation with those floating islands. It looks like a whole new mechanic with whatever. It's not the Sheikah Slate anymore. Something else he's using.
Yeah.
It was on his hip in the trailer, but
seems like the same world. They mainly just showed off the flying, right? Or falling in some parts. I'm really wondering like what else is going to be there. Because they really just haven't talked about this game much.
Well, it's coming May 5th, so we'll definitely see more, if not by the end of the year, early next year. Because I know Nintendo is not shy about showing off their games prior to release. I mean, there were a ton of demonstrations of Breath of the Wild before it came out.
Yeah, there were.
So we'll see plenty of this before release. But that's awesome, though. We have a solid date, May something. It's early May, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it could change. They've push back games before.
Hopefully it isn't delayed. I like the idea of playing a new Zelda game at the start of summer next year.
Oh, yeah. Did you expect a different, like a new name, not Breath of the Wild 2?
Yeah, I did. I figured Breath of the Wild 2 would be a temporary title or just like a placeholder for, because from what I understand, it is a continuation of the Breath of the Wild. So it is technically a sequel to that, but I'm glad that it has a new title for sure.
I mean, I don't know much about Zelda games, but I don't know. I just thought it was going to be Breath of the Wild 2. Kind of surprised me. At first, I thought it was just a brand new, like completely separate game. I wonder what Tears of the Kingdom refers to.
People actually speculated on that. In the opening of the trailer, there are drawings on a wall that look like teardrops, and people are thinking you collect these tears throughout the kingdom that have something to do. It's kind of like classic Zelda, and you go all these different dungeons and get, what's that word people use?
Treasures.
No, well, you could say that. There's a particular word in like filmmaking that's, it's not gobbledygook, but something else. I can't remember what it is. But you collect a series of items that contribute to you taking out the final boss. And typically, a sub-boss defends these items you need. Yeah. And like, what were we collecting in Breath of the Wild?
some kind of seeds, right? No, those were out in the open world.
That's not like that. Yeah, it's something else. I can't remember. Anyway, it's like people just speculating that you're collecting these tears for something in the game.
I don't know. I don't play video games.
Preston would know.
Maybe. Fire Emblem Engage. Garrett, did you watch this trailer?
I have.
It's another Fire Emblem game. I have nothing
to say about it, so it's all you.
So I'm a very novice Fire Emblem player. I've played Warriors, which is not a Fire Emblem game. It just takes place in the universe. It's not Fire Emblem, but I played the newest one, which is Three Houses on Switch, and that game was so much fun. And it wasn't even really, I mean, I enjoy the combat of Fire Emblem a lot in Three Houses. Like, I'm pretty sure the combat hasn't changed much over the years, but what I really loved in Three Houses was the things outside of the combat. It was like getting to know characters that you meet, or your students, basically, and forming relationships with them. And it really reminded me of Hogwarts, had a lot of themes of Hogwarts, so I loved it for a lot of those reasons. Engage, it's really the whole like engage thing is like, I think you sort of fusion with the past heroes of the Fire Emblem universe or something. That's sort of what I picked up through the trailer. You know, like lets you boost up in combat or something. And I'm sure there's like a story element to it, but this like hero awakens from his slumber and he, I was sort of joking with Garrett before the beginning of the podcast. He looks ridiculous. The main character, you can play as a guy or a girl, but they both have like half their hair is blue and the other half is red. And like their hair is just perfect. Like any anime game, all the characters look perfectly pristine. Like they just like got out of the salon or some shit. Like they just look perfect. And this dude's just supposed to have awoken out of his slumber and he's going to save the world. But Marth makes an appearance, and that's like one of the people you can engage with or like fusion with. I don't know how it works, but it definitely looks fun, and it's something that I'm probably going to play when it comes out, because I'm a Fire Emblem fan now. I like those games.
Respect, Jacob. I'm glad you like them.
Yeah, they're a good time. Octopath Traveler 2.
I'm confident I'll never play one as long as I live.
What? Why not?
But I'll live vicariously through you. They're just not my thing.
That sounds like, I mean, if you tried it, you might really like it.
I don't know, Jacob. I struggle to get into a lot of JRPGs, unfortunately.
Yeah, you couldn't even play Persona.
I respect them, but yeah, something about them just doesn't click with me.
I get you. Octopath Traveler 2 was, I don't think it was announced, but they showed a gameplay trailer. And I think a release date? I'm not for sure on that. But it's basically just a brand new game. 8 new heroes. I played the first one, really liked it. I think it's a really fun game that has really unique and beautiful visuals. That's really the main takeaway from it for me. It's just a very, I love the art style of this game. I love like all the, like, so each character that you pick up on your adventure, they each have like their own backstories and you sort of play through them in different chapters. And then you like sort of pick 4 of them as your party, and then which you can interchange at any time. And you just go through the world, going through like a main story at the same time while conquering their different chapters or their personal stories. And it's very reminiscent of like old Final Fantasy games. It's about saving the world and grouping up to accomplish that goal. I'm really looking forward to it. And I think it has like the same classes too. Like there's like, you got your cleric, there's a dancer, there's a thief, like, each one of those like tropes in a fantasy game is a character in the game. And I think they're bringing those same classes forward, just new characters, new personalities. It should be fun.
Thanks for the rundown.
Oh, yeah.
Well, would you like to talk about some fantasy TV for a moment?
I would love to, as long as people don't mind being spoiled.
I wasn't going to talk about spoilers. I was just going to ask your general thoughts on House of the Dragon and Rings of Power.
Which one would you like to tackle first?
Let's do House of the Dragon. Good, so I know choice. We're both more into that than Rings of Power right now.
Yep. So no spoilers. House of Dragon. It's not that I was pleasantly surprised, but I'm like really happy that I've enjoyed it as much as I have. You made the comment that it's very reminiscent of like early Game of Thrones, just in terms of like the politics and the pace of the story and
the drama.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very reminiscent of early Game of Thrones, which I absolutely love. It's very cool I mean, this is like a very, this is the tiniest of spoilers, but like, it's cool seeing a different like royal family controlling, you know, the capital. It's like a whole, it's a different time. Literally, it's just cool seeing who controls the capital in the Game of Thrones. I forgot. It's the Lannisters, right?
Yeah, the Lannisters. Mm-hmm.
It's cool, like seeing that, like they're still in this world, like they existed back when this show was happening, but they're just a different family that lives Castle Rock, right? I think that's mm-hmm. where they live, and like the Targaryens, they control the capital. It's just cool, like seeing how like I don't know how this show plays out. Like, other people might be really into Game of Thrones and they know everything about it, but like, I'm really looking forward to seeing like, how do the Targaryens sort of like crumble? How do they fall from power, and how do the Targaryens move in eventually? Because that's what happened. That's where Game of Thrones is. And I like, it's really like, I really love the daughter of the king. I think she's a great character. She's probably my favorite character out of all of them. I love all like the family drama and everything that's happening every episode.
It very much lives up to the title of the series, Game of Thrones, where everyone's literally playing the Game of Thrones to like how they can get in power.
Exactly.
It's just fun to watch unfold all the different motivations and like their conniving schemes to get there. It's just, and all the manipulation. It's just really entertaining stuff.
All the consequences that are happening because of that. Mm-hmm. Friendships are broken. Trust is broken. And there's just so much drama within, like, just like the uncle, the king, you know, the king's daughter, and his son. Like, it's just a lot to unpack every episode, and it's very entertaining. And there's lots of dragons. That's been cool too. See a lot more dragons. Maybe not so much the last episode or so, but I'm excited to see where the show goes.
Same. I have a lot of hope for it because, this is based, I didn't realize this before the first episode was out, but this is based on a book that mm-hmm. George R. R. Martin's already written. So the source material is there. He is also involved with this show. The only concern is that the main showrunner is leaving after season one and handing it off to his co-showrunner. So we'll see if it's still in good hands in season two.
We'll see.
But I still very much prefer focusing on where we're at in the story right now. They are planting seeds for Game of Thrones, the Song of Ice and Fire book within this show, which is cool to see. I appreciate those little Easter eggs, but I like that it's primarily focusing on the here and now.
Yeah.
And that's roughly 200 years before the events of Game of Thrones, so there's plenty of time to explore. And like you and I mentioned, like, we're not huge fans of the big time jumps, but if they're trying to like get through this story in a reasonable amount of time, I can understand why that's necessary. Hopefully the actresses replacing the actresses we're already used to are good. From what I understand, the older actresses were cast before the younger, but we've just already spent so much time with the younger, it'll be kind of weird and frankly jarring to jump to these older actresses. I think next episode, actually.
Oh, is it next episode?
From what I remember, I think that's what's happening.
Interesting. I didn't know that. Okay.
Hopefully that'll be cool. But yeah, I've mostly really enjoyed it so far. I've been bored. I've loved every episode. So excited to see mm-hmm. where it goes.
Oh yeah, it's kept my attention. Like I don't watch it on Sundays, but I watch it Monday nights when I eat dinner. So it's very entertaining hour for me. I always look forward to it.
I like it too, because even though I'm not enjoying Rings of Power as much, we can start talking about. I like that on Fridays we get Rings of Power, and then Sundays we get Game of Thrones,
yep.
So or House Love of the it. Dragon. So it's like a big fantasy weekend mm-hmm. every weekend. It's cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I'm a huge fantasy nut, so I'm like in heaven right now.
Yeah, it's cool.
Speaking of Rings of Power, though, I don't think it's bad by any means. I think there's some really solid things that are cool about Rings of Power. Like, I really like, so the story, the main character of Rings of Power is Galadriel, which she's in Lord of the Rings, the trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in the Hobbit movies too, or the books. But she's a lot younger. Well, yeah, she is younger. Elves just live a really long time, which makes sense why she's in pretty much every Lord of the Rings source material. But this is more of like the journey of her pursuing is it Morgoth?
I think it's Morgoth, yeah.
Which,
and eventually Sauron.
Eventually Sauron. And just sort of this has been her journey of pursuing him. And she's already gone to a lot of interesting places. It was really cool seeing, what's that city called? Like, so in Lord of the Rings, on their journey. I don't know if it's the Fellowship or the Two Towers, but they sail through this old city that's just it's flooded. Like, it's just a river now. But then, like, you see, like, the hands reaching out from the statues. But, like, in this show, you're actually in the city. Like, it's an actual bustling city. It's a human city. And those statues are, like, you know, towering over you because it hasn't flooded yet. And there's, like, a city beneath it. It's, like, in a crevice. Have you seen
the newest episode?
Yeah, I watched it last night.
Okay, I don't want to spoil it for people, but the beginning of that episode, something that it kind of, like, foreshadows, too. It's like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. I love... So, the dwarves in this show have been fantastic so far. I really love dwarves. I love that they've always lived in the mountains. I love... So, Elrond is also in the show. He's in Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. He's an elf, so he lives a very long time. He's a very important elf. And he's a lot younger in this show, too. And his relationship with the dwarves has been very interesting to watch and see how it's unfolded so far. I've been really enjoying that. You go. I'm having a brain fart.
Yeah, I have been a little bored only because the main direction of the plot is still kind of unfolding in these first four episodes. It's kind of setting up all the players, all the places they're in, and it's a lot of setup that hasn't really led anywhere significant yet. So that's why I haven't been as engaged as I am with House of the Dragon. But I also think there's a lot of good going for it. I think all the performances are really strong. All the sets are really impressive. And also the visual effects are truly stunning. They're so beautiful. And you can see as to why this show is as expensive as it was. Not just to mention the marketing side of it, but also just the production value is very high.
Yeah.
That's definitely a strong suit. It doesn't look like a TV show, which is a good thing. I also really like the portrayal of the orcs. The first time they reveal the orcs was unlike anything I'd ever seen in Lord of the Rings and made them like kind of like truly horrific. Yeah. I was like, man, these guys are cool.
The show has been really slow. I completely agree with you. But I've also kind of liked it being slow in a sense because I do really like world building. And I feel like in this show, it's necessary to sort of because of like all these different. I mean, it's kind of like Game of Thrones in a sense where there's a lot of these different characters that are all sort of potentially dealing with the same issues you have to imagine. And some of these people are going to meet up at some point. And I sort of like seeing like, okay, what's going on for these characters over here? And like, what are they dealing with? And like, then you go over here, then like, oh, they're doing something completely different and doing this completely different mission. Then you got like these halflings that are like, are they hobbits? Like, I have no idea. Maybe they turn into hobbits.
Those are hobbits before they call themselves hobbits. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like that. What are they called? Halflings or something?
Call them Harfoots.
Harfoots, yes. Thank you. They're ridiculous. I don't even know what to think about them yet.
Dude, hobbits always stress me out so much, dude, because they're just like so high strung and just like, I would never want to hang out with you people. It's like, they're just so concerned about everything. And I get it because they're so small and like they have their very normal resources and they have to be careful about how they get around. I get it. But at the same time, like you guys just stress me out. I would not want to hang out with you.
And while they might be one of like the least interesting stories happening at the moment, like I still think it's interesting and it's I'm excited to see like how they add to the overall story of Rings of Power. Like, how do they come into it? And like they just do like these things that seem so just minuscule and compared like to the events of the entire world as a whole. It's just fun seeing like a more lighthearted, like, you know, they don't have like an easy way of life. They just have a different way of dealing with their troubles and what they have to deal with on a daily basis. So it's just, I'm just enjoying the world building, I guess. It's not as good as House of Dragons. I don't think they're two different kinds of shows in a sense. Like, I don't know. I enjoy them both for different reasons, I want to say. But House of Dragons is a little more interesting right now.
I know why I'm kind of bored with Rings of Power is because a major appeal of the Lord of the Rings trilogy is because it's a driving storyline that's surrounded by good world building. Like, it doesn't really slow down too much.
Yeah.
The benefit of a TV show is that, of course, you have more room to breathe to like flesh out the world and the characters and their backstories. But I still think it's possible to have a more engaging plot while still doing that world building. It's just been a little too slow for me. I'd rather them like be driving towards something while all this immaculate world building is happening around them. Because of that, it's kind of been less engaging to me. But again, like I said, I don't think it's a bad show, but I hope the plot picks up a little bit toward the latter half of the first season. So
I agree with you.
But yeah, Jacob, I have looked at our social media and our Discord, and we have not received any Ask IOG questions. And it's our fault because totally forgot to put out a call to action for our questions this week.
And we just never record anymore.
Right. So I totally get it. So none this week, but I don't think there's anything else I had to comment on. Is there anything we're forgetting that you wanted to talk about?
Not really, man. Just really excited to go on vacation.
Yeah, I'm excited for you.
I'm going to take my Switch. Everyone. So I need your help. I need a Switch game to play while I'm gone on vacation. It's for when, like, you know, it's the wee. There's the late hours of the night. I'm not on the beach. I need something to do. What should I be playing while I'm gone? I'm really open to anything. Just throw out some suggestions if you want. Like, do it on Discord or, like, tag me on Twitter. Leave a comment on YouTube. I really want to hear your thoughts on what are, like, the must-plays on Switch right now. I mean, I've played, like, the big ones, right? Like, Octopath, Fire Emblem. You know, I played the big games. So. No, I'm kidding. Like I played Mario Odyssey. I played Breath of the Wild. Like, I played... pretty much all the big games. I haven't played like the Kirby game, so maybe that would be fun. But what do you think like are the best experiences on Switch? I need something new. So let me hear your thoughts. What about you, Garrett? Any closing thoughts?
I don't think so. I'm excited for you to be moving to Atlanta in the near future, turning out some videos. I might do a couple more YouTube videos if I have time coming up, stuff I've wanted to talk about recently for fun. So depending on how work plays out, so.
Oh, one other thing. I got into the Dragonflight beta for WoW, which is the new expansion coming out. So I'm going to be playing the new class soon. So I'll have some thoughts on that. I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm going to check out the new continent. It's going to be great.
Awesome. Stoked for you, Jacob.
Yeah, I'm happy.
Sweet. Well, I enjoyed talking about video games with you. It had been a minute, but glad to be back. And a lot of stuff to look forward to. So I look forward to doing another podcast with you, hopefully in the near future.
Yes, sir. Let's do it.
Awesome. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this was the It's Obvious podcast, episode 274. Of course, the podcast is available on YouTube and all the podcasting services. And we'd love to hear from you. Any Ask IOG questions for the future episodes and just your thoughts in general on what's going on. We'd love to hear from you guys. We'll catch you on Discord, maybe YouTube, maybe on video games. We'll see. But we love you. Good to be back. And thanks for tuning in.
Goodbye now.
Later.